Hello and welcome to the Big Mouth Brexit Bunker. After yesterday's vote, we can confirm that Britain will be leaving all European pop music and entertainment behind. Vans will be coming around tomorrow to collect your Daft Punk and Royksopp CDs, your DVDs of The Killing and the Bridge, and your suspiciously cosmopolitan books by Stieg Larsson and Michelle Welbeck.
But think of all the fantastic picture sleeves we can get again from Europe.
Absolutely, yeah, with Super Disco 45 printed exactly. In the corner. Anyway, let's enjoy things while we can. I'm Andrew Harrison, and with me is Sean Pattenden, the expansive and open-minded Norway plus to my unforgiving no deal. Hello, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you, Andrew Harrison.
I promise to shut up about Brexit now. Are you excited that Bross are playing the Brixton Academy?
Brexit to Bross.
Yes. Bross.
I was thinking Brexit. Only 3.5 weeks ago we were talking about Bross and now we're about to Brexit. Yes, very excited. I'm going to get some tickets. I'm going to be down the front.
Is this their secret plan working out that they would reinvent themselves as a kind of like the Rocky Horror Show of pop groups? We've got to go because it's ironic and hilarious.
Absolutely, totally, and it's worked very well for them, hasn't it? They have completely reinvented themselves and they're terribly popular now, and it's going to be lots of 40-year-old people who read Twitter all the time at the front, like me.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I reckon the Brixton Academy is quite a good environment for them. You'll be able to see them.
Yeah.
Rather than just dancing.
But they're quite tall
on.
As well.
Are they?
Quite easily.
Yeah. Do you think they should embrace their new status and have a conversation corner in the Brixton Academy and T-shirts with, you know, that dog painting with the pint?
I love that painting. Well, they should get that on the T-shirts, yes. A conversation corner is very smash hits as well.
It is.
They should definitely put that down there. And they should also have a tingly balls section, maybe a cocktail.
Tingly I actually balls, missed the tingly balls bit.
What it's on the DVD extras, Andrew Harrison. Come on, get the DVD.
I thought it was a smash hits thing.
Tingly balls.
Oh, no,
should
no,
have been.
No, no.
Should have been,
no,
definitely.
It's Bross thing.
Well, the first of our two guests, you heard him sighing a moment ago. He writes about TV for The Telegraph and The Guardian. He's a former editor of Sky Magazine and co-conspirator on Young Men's Weekly Zoo. How long ago that seems. And he's a Big Mouth regular. Welcome back, Michael Hogan. How are you?
Hiya. I'm good, thank you.
Now, incredibly, you didn't watch either Channel 4's Brexit the Uncivil War or Charlie Brooker's new movie, so there goes my Cumberbatch your Bandersnatch gag.
Yeah,
knocked out
sorry about
park.
That.
Never mind.
Unfortunately, at The Telegraph, there were people queuing up to review the Brexit documentary, as you can imagine, so I politely backed away from that one.
They gave it 6 out of 5.
And said, brilliant. They gave it 4 out of 5. Guardian gave it 2, I
yeah.
believe.
Ooh. Yeah, I find it hard to watch. Mm. But I find it hard to get past my hatred of the central character.
You should launch a podcast about it.
I should, shouldn't I? Yeah. So you're bigging up True Detective Season 3 at the minute. What's is this a David Bowie-like return to form?
Yeah, I think so. Well, but judging by the first two episodes, it is, yeah. Obviously, Series 1, whatever, you know, whichever way you... whatever shakes your boat, was brilliant. Matthew McConaughey... Yeah. Reinvented himself, the McGonaissance, I believe,
oh,
it was part
good,
of.
Yes.
And that was amazing. And then Series 2 was a massive, big, fat flop,
yeah.
Sprawling mess.
So what makes this one good?
Well, they've kind of returned to the original formula, which is a kind of cop duo looking back at a historic crime and reopening it. And it's quite spooky. And the guy from Moonlight is amazing in it. He's kind of the lead. Stephen Dorff's his sidekick. And the first two episodes, yeah, are really, really promising.
Excellent. And the big Christmas disaster of telly was the in-betweeners reunited, Friends reunited.
Oh,
what went so badly wrong with that?
Man. It was. It just looked like it had been sort of thrown together kind of in about sort of 2 days down the pub. It was terrible. We love the in-betweeners. And I think it was quite cleverly scheduled for New Year's Day when everyone's a bit sort of broken and hungover and, you know, you want a kind of glorified list show and some knob gags. And then, yeah, it was just an absolute honker.
Oh, good God. I think that's a franchise killer.
Yeah.
What's good that's coming up this year that you think the viewers need to put on their wall planners?
Well, there's a lot of dancing shows on air at the moment still, even though Strictly's finished. And I'm really enjoying the kind of the sleeper hit of them. There's The Greatest Dance from BBC, which is a bit of a flop. There's Dancing on Ice on ITV, which is, yeah. But Flirty Dancing on Channel 4, I would recommend to you.
I saw the trailer.
It's better than, way better than it sounds.
It looked terrible.
It's like dating via dance. What's not to love? It's first date meets Strictly. And I know that sounds like it's been kind of put together by an algorithm, but it's actually really charming and really life-affirming and lovely.
You heard him earlier. Also joining us today is the longtime news editor of Mojo Magazine, former staffer at Select Magazine and devotee of The Fall, Cannes and Go-Kart Mozart. I have to introduce him because he's Andrew's brother.
No, I'm not.
Otherwise, it would be weird. You can't have Andrew introducing his brother. So hello, Ian Harrison.
Hello,
welcome back.
Hello. Thank you very much.
How's life at Mojo at the moment?
Wonderful.
Tell me more.
Well, you know, you're just carrying on, aren't you? I don't know. how can you talk about something that you're in so intimately with? Mm. We just go on.
New music, so that means new music for 2019 must be really, really good, and you're excited about that.
Well, I mean,
even though you've got Mojo, and it's old music.
Well, I was going to say you have to understand that you'd end up taking the view that if you aren't ultimately totally familiar with it, it may as well be new music. You know,
right.
I don't fetishise things simply because they're new. But I have received a fantastic box set called All the Young Droogs, which is loads of sort of bother music from the 70s, which has been mined before, but it's a load of new stuff which is unfamiliar to me. So that's my current new music.
Mm-hmm. We're actually going to be doing that next week on the show.
Oh,
Phil
wonderful.
King's box set.
Yes, it's great. It's great. Which also, you know, there's loads of groups which are, you know, are also into this stuff. So that's my thing for 2019.
Was the much
bother?
Bother. Yeah.
New
stopping thinking. That's the thing.
Yeah, just kicking stuff.
Okay.
Kicking stuff. Amal and the Sniffers, they're really good as well.
Oh, I saw them live. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Is there much excitement about The Who returning after 13 years?
13 years. Yes, because it's The Who, you know. And, you know, it's all this sort of uncharted territory stuff, isn't it? You know, to debuting the stuff at this age that they are. But I'm confident that they will still be able to do something that is worthwhile.
Well, Pete Townsend writes, quoted, saying it's got heavy rock stuff, experimental electronica.
I know what you're going to say.
Sampled stuff and Who-ish tunes.
Doesn't he also say guitars that go da-dang as well?
Yeah.
I believe
yeah.
the quote is Yang-a-dang.
Yang-a-dang.
Yang-a-dang, actually.
They sang Yang-a-dang.
And they ran with the gang.
That's it. Yeah.
He's still not published that book, though, has he?
No.
It's coming. He's saving it for the book in a very real way.
Very well researched.
Mm-hmm. And Mojo going to be commenting on the Robbie Williams taunting Jimmy Page story that we've all been reading this week.
Which is amazing.
Well, we haven't really talked about it yet, but possibly, yeah. I hope it's true.
Yeah.
Oh, it must
but
be
it probably
true.
Isn't, though, is it? To be
Do
honest.
You not think
it's, no. it's in court? It's been filed in court. He's been blasting Black Sabbath music and wearing a long hair wig and stuffing a pillow under his shirt in an attempt to mock or imitate Mr. Robert Plant's beer belly that he acquired in his older age. What's it say, Mr. Robert Plant? It's not Mr. Robert.
I know. Why is it Robert Plant?
I don't know. That's
why
what the BBC
mocking
said.
Robert Plant to Jimmy Page? What's that all about? What is it with that?
That's a BBC error.
It is,
Robert Plant
it?
Hasn't got a beer belly. He's quite svelte.
Yeah,
he's still out there doing all the time.
Must be furious about it.
Absolutely.
Wear a wig, fine. Yeah. Don't just pretend I've got a beer belly. Right. I haven't.
Should Jimmy retaliate in any way?
Well, I mean, maybe he has done.
Maybe he could dress as Gary Barlow.
How do we know he hasn't?
In the black arts.
Well, who knows? I wouldn't like to say.
Pentagram in the
kitchen.
I wouldn't
like to go there.
I wouldn't like to go there.
No.
Anyway.
I would like to go to his house. His house looks great. That'd be fascinating to know that.
Yeah, John Betjeman used to live in it.
It's a real life Stella Street, isn't it?
It is a real life
brilliant story.
It is, it is.
Anyway, never mind all that. We've got a show to do. And this week we are talking about Stan and Ollie. Can John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan bring the greatest comedy duo of all time to convincing life? And how many hankies should you take to this terribly moving picture? Also, Trevor Horn reimagines the 1980s. Why? Just the decade of massive drums, extended remixes, and if your grandmother should die while in the shelter, put her outside, need reimagining. And the fourth solo album by former Beta Band person Steve Mason, what is About the Light about? And will you enjoy it? Plus the usual tracks chosen by our guests after this quick message from Sian.
While you fill the cupboard under the stairs with lentils and powdered eggs in anticipation of a no-deal Brexit, or just the dissolution of the UK as a concept in general, why not invest your mental well-being by ensuring you have plenty of quality podcasting to see you through our bright future? Pledge to support Big Mouth on the crowdfunding platform Patreon, and you'll be helping us to cover our production costs, and you'll get an extra bit every week. You'll also get a lovely warm feeling of righteousness. Plus, in a brand new innovation for 2019, we'll send the podcast a day early to all Patreon backers starting next week. Woo! Beat the rush, be the envy of your friends, and listen to Big Mouth on a Friday morning instead. It's amazing. All we're after is the equivalent of £5 a month or the price of a swanky uptown pint. Just search Patreon Big Mouth or go to the Big Mouth Facebook page to find out more. All we're saying is buy us a pint.
Okay, here's another nice mess we've gotten you into. Stan and Ollie stars Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly as Laurel and Hardy, two of the greatest practitioners of physical comedy in the history of recorded media. It's hard to imagine a more recognisable duo. Like Chaplin, they were a walking logo. But unlike Chaplin, they made their career in talkies. John S. Byrd's film looks at them in diminished circumstances. Having split their partnership under pressure from the tyrannical producer Hal Roach, they've been estranged for 16 years and they're now reunited for a live tour of UK theatres that is far from Hollywood level. Capturing the mannerisms is challenging, but does Stan and Ollie work on levels beyond nostalgia and verisimilitude? Before we talk about it, it's hard to convey physical comedy in audio form, but here's the trailer for your mind's eye.
You feel
about the size of the audiences.
I've been a little disappointed.
And they said, could you persuade Stan and Ollie to do some publicity in order to turn the tour around?
Could there be any more money?
They said no.
But who is they?
People. The worst kind.
Here we are. The Eiffel Tower.
How is Oliver?
He pulling weight?
How's your knee?
It hurts.
Has he been pushing you a little too hard, mate?
No.
You could have long time ago said goodbye, Oliver.
That's all in the past.
You're not still carrying that around, are you? Because I went ahead and did a picture with someone else 16 years ago.
You and Harry are just going to be great together. Mm-hmm. Couldn't sleep for days when they told me what you did.
And I couldn't sleep when I did it.
You betrayed me. Betrayed our friendship. I loved us.
You loved Laurel and Hardy. But you never loved me. The doctors told me I can't continue with the tour. My heart won't take it.
He asked me, since you were sick, if I wouldn't mind carrying on the show with somebody else.
May I introduce to you Mr. Nobby Cook?
You're not leaving, are you, Stan?
The show must go on.
That was pure magic. It's brilliant.
Did you know that in Danish they're known as wacky and pompous?
I did, actually.
That's useful, yeah. useful facts. Michael Hogan, were you part of the generation that was raised on Stan and Ollie on the BBC on rainy afternoons?
No, I
you
wasn't. I don't know
it.
Why. I kind of missed out on the kind of the whole Laurel and Hardy. Not only Laurel and Hardy, but Harold Lloyd and Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin.
What must your soul be like?
I know. You know, it's a bit like, there always seemed like more exciting cartoons and colour and stuff going on back then. So I watched those. And then I suppose it's like music. You know, if you miss out on that first time round, maybe you go back and, you know, investigate it later as a grown-up. So that's kind of what I feel.
Well, Michael,
like
weren't you watching, like, it's sort of 20 to 6 on BBC Two, like on weekdays, after the children's programmes had finished? Mm. Weren't you sort of
Drawn in.
I don't know. What was I doing then? I was
pretty down, riding your bike.
Pretty down the wreck.
What did you make of Stan and Ollie the movie?
I really liked it. Yeah. I would give it 4 weepy hankies out of 5. Mm-hmm. It's really good. And the performances are amazing, I think, genuinely. Steve Coogan, especially, is extraordinary in it, I think. He got a BAFTA nomination last week. Mm. And one can see why. I mean, John C. Reilly's good too. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. He's acting through a kind of big chubby prosthetic and does it very well, and the chemistry between them is really good. It's all the sort of things that people say in film reviews, you know, funny but touching, bittersweet, all those kind of phrases.
Well, I thought it was a kind of a double level of poignancy to it, because on the one hand, you're kind of, if you're like me and you loved Stan Ollie when you were growing up, you're kind of revisiting this thing that you miss, like all nostalgia is missing childhood, isn't it? But also there's the poignancy in the fact that they are, you know, estranged and can only really relate through the work.
Yeah, and yeah, it's kind of a love story in many ways, and, you know, they feel a bit betrayed by each other. And there's this kind of, I think the film kind of lifts the level when the wives arrive. Their wives are another kind of double act. I think, so they say in the film, it's like we've got two double acts on the road. There's this kind of Stan's kind of quite fearsome Russian wife who's kind of an ex-dancer, and then and Ollie's wife who's kind of smaller and mousier but really fiercely protective of him, and they have their own little vibe too. And it's really, I don't know, there's a brilliant bit where they when they sort of kiss and make up, and Stan gets into bed with Ollie.
Like in the films.
Yeah. And it's genuinely really sweet. And then there's another bit where even the two wives put their different sides and they hold hands. Mm. And both of those things are kind of, you know, you'll find something in your eye at both moments, I think.
Ian, I don't have to ask you whether you are a true son of the desert.
I am.
Because
I am. Well, I found things in my eyes, like loads with this film. I thought it was so, you know, I'm feeling it now. You know, there's something quite profound about it.
Yeah.
It's a story is... you know, there's a lot of films, isn't it, about, you know, life's work, friendship, things coming to an end, feeling sad about this stuff, looking back. But I think for what really sent it totally through the roof for me was, as you say, that how right they got it. Steve Coogan is so good. We all know he's an extraordinarily talented man, but when he is, he had Stan's ears, he had Stan's teeth. Now, I'm sure there's a bit of prosthetic stuff going on there, but this stuff can often look, you know, it sticks out like it sticks out a mile.
I think he had a bit of chin extra.
Yes,
didn't
I think he probably
his
did.
His face has been lengthened
but
somehow.
Even so, without something coming from within, without the essence from within, I don't think it would have, you know, counted for 2p. But yeah, it was a lovely, lovely film. And John C. Reilly, I thought, was fantastic as Ollie. You know, you shut your eyes. You know, they sounded just like them. Yeah. You know, the gag in the hospital bed with the hard boiled eggs and nuts. Yeah. They should actually do a stage show. They should try and do some kind of live thing, but also, or remake one of the shorts. Yeah. I think it's that good.
And kind of reprising the Wild West dance, the famous kind of Wild West dance. It's just beautifully done. But it's more than just a recreation, isn't it? Because what you see is, like I say, they can only really relate to the work, but also their own lives and the work are kind of the same thing. Mm. You know, there are countless Laurel and Hardy films where they're badgered by mad wives, often played by one another. Mm. And to see it...
I think they did that once,
but there's a lot. There's often, Stan's wife and Ollie's wife.
Yeah.
You know,
But I think you have to remember that there is, the story has been, you know, edited slightly. I mean, they did meet within those 16 years. They did do bits of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think they actually did stuff afterwards as well. So this idea that, you know, Stan spent the rest of his life writing, you know, material that they never met again. No, you have to do that, don't you? Because it's a film and they want to deliver those final, you know, kicks to your emotional glands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've combined two tours, haven't they, into the story, I believe.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a bit of artistic license. But
yes.
I don't know, you know, the Savoy, I made me want to stay at the Savoy as well. The Savoy looks fantastic.
I mean, to harp on a bit how close they got it, I think there's like one, there was an enthusiastic Worthing holiday camp type woman, who I thought got it wrong. She was a modern person being enthusiastic. Mm. And then that was about the only thing that didn't ring true for me.
Yeah.
The rest of it was, and you know, they are, obviously, they are playing somebody else. Mm. The story wouldn't have worked as well for me without that.
Yeah. I mean, so much of the... It made me realise as well how much of the humour in original Laurel and Hardy is based on the kind of, like, micro-expressions and little turns of the head and little twitches that you would imagine would not convey on a wide shot in a kind of, you know, black and white pre-modern cinema. And yet you realise from seeing them shot close up here how much it worked originally, how much they were, like, masters of that craft.
Mm. Yeah, Steve Coogan's eyebrows are great, aren't they? He does a lot of eyebrow acting, a lot of elbow acting.
A lot of eyebrow acting. Yeah.
And obviously, the shrugging.
John C. Reilly's fingers do a lot of stuff as well.
He did give great fingers, didn't he? All the way through, again.
But also, you realise how much they were really modern performers, because they were like original. Ollie, in particular, a great breaker of the fourth wall, with his constant weary turns to camera, turns to the audience, fiddling with tie, as if to say, have you seen what this fella's just done to me?
Yeah. Actually, I tell you what else it did for me, because I mean, I've got a load of, you know, Ronaldo stuff kicking around the house. I thought, you know, I've got to watch this stuff again. I mean, there was a thing, wasn't there, when Peter Cook was voted the greatest British comedian of all time, thinking, he's not really, you know. That's just a load of people on on websites piling up the votes. I don't know if I can really compare it. You know, this is stuff is, it's kind of, you know, immortally humorous.
It is.
It reminded me why I loved it then and why I still do.
Sean, we completely left you out. What did you think of it?
That's because I'm thinking about it. Laurel and Hardy, to me, were Saturday afternoons and it's raining when you couldn't go out. Mm. Really old-fashioned, didn't really like it. Oh, that bloody awful music.
Dare you.
Oh, I hated that. But this made me warm to them more. I thought how, like, the trip it is. Steve Coogan's replaying the trip. It's about two men, how they get on, and they're wandering around whatever country, well, it's UK here. And it's about their relationship, which I did enjoy. But there's something very, again, it's BBC films, something very BBC. It's very straight, it's very literal, it's very, it knows when to pull the...
Yeah,
heart
it felt
strings.
A bit like a TV movie to me sometimes.
It did to me, and while I enjoyed it, it didn't make me want to go back and look at Laurel and Hardy films. I wanted to put them back there, thank you. Put them back in the cupboard and go and do something else. I didn't really warm to the Steve Coogan.
Do you think then that in 30 years' time we'll look back on Steve Coogan's career and it will be a lonely man repeatedly fails to make connections with his friends and his family? Because that's basically all of his roles, isn't it?
Yes,
It's Alan Partridge, it's this, it's the trip.
Here we are, in that sense, and he's an auteur, isn't he?
Possibly not Tony Wilson.
Although he's very good being Tony Wilson.
He's very good being Tony Wilson.
Yeah.
And of course, like, Tony Wilson would consider Stan Ollie to be part of the Northern canon, because he claimed everybody for that, didn't he?
Of course. But the women in it are very good. They play the wise, but they come out of that role. They leap out of it, and they're double actors, we're saying. They are a comedy act in themselves. That's wonderful, and I really enjoyed seeing that. And it did. The film really perks up. Once they're there,
and they're
in fighting, I think was really interesting. So
what we really need is for John C. Reilly, Steve Coogan, and Shirley Henderson to all hit Hard Times and have to go to Netflix to make a lengthy, open-ended Laurel and Hardy series. That's what we really need.
And the other great thing is they've got James Finlayson, the irascible Scots with the mustache.
Yeah.
You know, he is actually in the film early on, we see him.
Also, the fantastic appearance by John Henshaw as Nobby Cook. The ringer, the brilliant John Henshaw, fantastic Manchester actor. So basically, broadly speaking, we like it.
Yes.
Broadly speaking, we
Rufus
like
Jones
it.
Rufus Jones is very good as well. Word for him, I think. He plays the kind of smarmy...
The age
Bernard Delphont.
Bernard Delphont. Such a fantastic
We need name. More people like with names like Bernard Delphont.
Oh, he's great. He's perfect, wasn't he?
All right, then. Let's get our act together. It's time for a bit of music chosen by one of our guests in their editor's recommendation. Ian Harrison of Harrison fame. What have you chosen to inflict on our listeners?
It's Kebab Spider by Sleaford Mods.
Tell us about it.
It's just, I mean, tell us about it. Say what? It's just.
Is it like their old stuff? Like, I'm a big Sleaford Mods fan. What should I
expect?
Do you know
what I like about them? Mm-hmm. They don't seem to change. It just it reduces and reduces.
Yeah, but do you not think it's a bit groovier than usual?
They have been very groovy in the past. You know, they've made loads of records. This is the thing. They've been going for donkey's years. So there's lots of things to, you know.
Yeah. I thought this one was considerably noticeably funkier and considerably noticeably more Motowny.
Why do you like them?
Why do I like them? I think probably because they are similar in age to myself, and the outlook on life is similar.
Yeah.
You know, you have to own up to this sometimes, you know, when things are kind of moving quite rapidly and, you know, you get a bit more grouchy as one gets older, don't we, Michael?
Yes, we do.
And to see something like this, which is basically Marky Smith's dead now, isn't he? What else am I going to do? You know, so they fill it. They fill that gap for me very well, and I just like the sound of it. You know, it's kind of a horrible and stimulating.
And stimulating. They'll put that on the poster.
They will. Yeah. It seems, you know, there is an unedited quality of it, which I do appreciate now when everything is so very, very polished and, you know, thought about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's have a listen then, shall we? This is Kebab Spider by Sleaford Mods.
In jangles and the measure of limited release, I blubber at my earliest convenience tea. Hey, the satin nights are dog shit, the creme de la creme of feet. Of course we're fucking relevant, it's solid and it's sweet. Oh no, oh no.
Right, now from the Sleaford Mods to the future, or at least the future as imagined in 1984. In one of the odder releases of the new year, Uber producer, he's not a cab driver, Trevor Horn has convened his Psalm Orchestra to re-record a suite of 80s hits as Trevor Horn reimagines the 80s. There's a few tracks our Trev produced first time round himself, Frankie's Power of Love, Yes's Owner of a Lonely Heart and Grace Jones' Slave to the Rhythm. But mostly he's remaking the records he himself competed with the aid of a mixed bag of collaborators from Robbie Williams and Seal to Tony Hadley and Steve Hogarth from Marillion. What is going on and who is this for? We're going to talk about it after one of the better tracks. This is Bowie's Ashes to Ashes, and get your bucket of herring ready because the singer is Seal. Off.
But I'm hoping to kick, but the planet is glowing. Ashes to ashes, funk to funky. We know that Major Tom's a junkie. Strung out in heaven's high, hitting an all-time low.
Funk to extremely funky, Ashes to Ashes from Trevor Horn reimagines the 80s. Ian Harrison, I have it on good authority that you were such a Trevor Horn nut in the 80s that you bought every possible format of Duel by Propaganda and used to make your own cut-up tapes of Two Tribes using a cassette player and a scalpel.
I did. I did. I had loads of copies of Duel. I had loads of copies of P Machinery as well.
Great.
Yeah,
you know, double packs,
see-through
vinyl.
And what did you do? You just sort of spooled the tape?
You'd have to repair the tape occasionally. I just used to sit there with the pause button. You know, thinking one day I'll be like Trevor Horn. I'm sure he started that. But funnily enough, what's Trevor Horn's favourite format?
The cassette. Yeah.
Because of its warm fuzziness. So there you go.
And it gets easily warped.
True. Well, we all do, don't we?
What was the appeal of Trevor Horn in the glory days then?
Well, I mean, this phrase, I mean, it's a frightful cliche, isn't it? You know, he invented the 80s. And he kind of did, didn't he? It was huge and it was shiny and it was just sort of inarguable.
Yeah.
And even records that you kind of didn't like, you liked. Dollar Records, for example.
Because Trevor Horn produced
because
them.
He'd done them. There was something about the future.
Yeah, but they are quite good, actually.
Yeah, I know they are. But I'm talking about when you're younger and you're sort of a bit more partisan in your tastes. Mm.
So what did you get from this? He's gone back and he's reimagined the 80s
it's
because we need that for 2019.
We kind of do. I mean, it sounds, you know, The way you described it, that's what you're going to get. I don't know what else you're going to expect from it. I mean, it sounds absolutely fantastic. The orchestra sounds great. I think the songs he does himself, actually, are the ones I like the most. Because he does Take On Me and he does Owner of a Lonely Heart. And, you know, Take On Me certainly comes out sounding quite quite poignant. Mm-hmm. Why is he doing it? Why does anybody do anything? He must be answering some kind of need in himself, mustn't he? Strange, revisiting that glorious time.
Yeah, perhaps he's got some issues. Perhaps his therapist has said, you need to go and reimagine the 80s.
Well, I suppose, if you are his state. I mean, tell what was funny about it. Yeah, I'm sitting there looking at the various people who are on there. And some of them, you know, some of the songs don't really improve on the originals, do
Name
they?
Name some names, yes.
I think there was one of them, Gabrielle Aplin. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce the name.
Yeah.
Aplin. And it sounds like a John Lewis advert.
Yeah, so you should just dance in the dark.
There's a lot of John Lewis advert on
there. There is. But whatever, you know, it sounds great. Some of it. And also the Blue Monday version with sort of the preacher on it.
It's bizarre.
And it's because it has a sort of a hint of Left to My Own Devices, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, it's a bit high energy, isn't it?
It is rather. Now, you just said bizarre. Isn't that good?
Well,
no.
I don't know. I mean,
no, it isn't.
My feeling about it was this is part of the world of Hacienda Classical.
Yes.
I will in no way disparage an 80s revival tour. I've been to them. They're great. Go and see the Bell Stars and go and see Altered Images all played in front of the same man. There can be tremendous great fun. There's no sort of, rock bore cool points to be had and good, because rock bore cool points are horrible. But there is I do think that this idea that dumping an orchestra on things automatically elevates them and makes them a good night out doesn't necessarily work here. All of the tunes here, these were produced cheaply with the available equipment. Most of them were not Trevor Horn mega productions. They were kind of made by mistake
it's a thing that when you mentioned propaganda, it really stuck with me in Smash Hits. One of my favourite Smash Hits quotes is when they're interviewing Claudia, I believe, from Propaganda. And there's a noise that sounds a bit like an elephant on a duel. And they say, was that a real elephant? And she says, no, it was a microchip with big ears.
I remember that very clearly.
They weren't cheap records, though, were they?
A lot of the tracks on here were not made on the kind of mega Trevor Horn model. And what he's done is he's applied that fantastic construction, of a huge ornate edifice. And I don't think a lot of these songs kind of are improved by it. I think there's a whole lot of X Factor going on here as well. I think the version of The Power of Love with... Who is this?
Is exactly.
It's an X Factor man.
His pastes.
It's X Factor.
He's obviously put the pastes down. You know, I used to have an obsession with him and his pastes. Waitrose magazine. It's one of the big mouths. He's put them down to come and sing Power of Love.
What's this about pastes?
Mega cheese.
Oh, he likes fish pastes and other different pastes. I'll send you the article. Yes. Michael, what did you think overall?
I said, stop it, Trevor. Step away from the orchestra. I found it absolutely baffling. I don't think a single song is improved by this. It just sounds like, it's like, Disco Week on X Factor or kind of...
Yeah.
Or it's just the sound... To me, it's the sound of a midlife crisis on CD. It's like, leave the songs alone. It says it breathes new life into them. No! Don't breathe new life into them. Breathe the old life into them. Leave it alone. Also, my voice is getting high because I'm getting quite angry about this. He starts off, obviously, track one, Robbie Williams, that's the single, quite a big name. And then the four, by the time you get further down the album, to Matt Cardlin, the bloke from Marillion who isn't fish. You know what I mean? The sort of vegan fish substitute. and Rumour and the woman off the John Lewis ad. And
Seals
sort of Tony Hadley belting out a kind of wine bar.
Now, Tony really should have done Private Dancer, shouldn't he?
Oh, man. It just sounds like, it's like wine bar... Cruise ship.
Very big wine bar with the orchestra.
Huge wine bar.
Yeah, massive wine
bar.
Big wine cellar in probably Munich, I imagine. No, it drains all the kind of sex and groove and funk out of anything. I mean, you don't take, Grace Jones or David Bowie or Blue Monday and then turn it into like a big wishy-washy beige orchestra thing. It just
or you do.
Well, makes you do is kind of think.
But
the original's way better.
We tend to concentrate on the cooler stuff. So ABC, Frankie, Pet Shop Boys. But Trevor Horn is a mainstream producer. He produces Seal. He produces Rod Stewart. So maybe this is the true him. You know, he is AOR. He wants to... This is the stuff he was really interested in.
And also, he's a pop music guy. And what he always says is, you know, pop music is like a hamburger. It's just like, it's got to deliver immediately. It's got to look amazing. Mm. It doesn't matter that it might be crass and brightly coloured.
Yeah, but here he's trying to make a posh gourmet burger, isn't he? And it just doesn't work, yeah.
Do you think it's one of those kind of 15 quid burgers with gold leaf on top?
Absolutely.
Now, before every single song, I had this inner wince because you hear this lush orchestration, and what goes really badly with lush orchestration is people over-singing it. And I was, you know, Robbie Williams, there he is on the credit of the first one. I was thinking he's going to do it. And he's tried at least to pare these singers down. And what I thought was there must be a word. You know that bit when you go, when you reach, you really over-egg a note. And it's just before you get to the... You can really tell all these singers were trying not to do it. Tony Hadley especially, who's a big kind of person. and yet still he couldn't quite suppress this over-singing that all these sort of Butlins people have.
Yeah, it reminded me also slightly, painful, I don't know why. Listen. Do you remember Mike Flowers Pops doing Wonderwall?
Yes.
It felt a bit like a sort of novelty 90s record of like, imagine, wouldn't it be hilarious, like, ironic, if all these rubbish old pop tunes are reinvented by... No, they were great pop tunes.
But I don't think this is ironic at all. I think this is a damn absolutely sincere attempt to do a great big night out for people who don't listen to Poncy podcasts like this. It's for you know, Heart FM and Magic FM people to go out and have a jolly good time, which is fair enough.
Well, fuck those people. I don't want.
And you're sorry, that's
kind of hard. It's a podcast. You can say what you like. Yeah.
Can I just say, Sean? I think the Japanese edition comes with an instrumental disc.
Does it?
So you don't have to
listen to any of the singers.
So you're only going to pay 60 quid for the instrument list.
But what about all the people
who get an Obi
strip? Cardle and the bloke from Marillion Who Isn't Fish?
Well, what about all the fans of him?
They have that on the other CD. Oh. You probably get two CDs.
I thought that was an interesting choice of song, though, wasn't it? That Joe Jackson song. Well, thinking of things, nice things.
Yeah, it was always nice to hear that. I mean, the song's great. Don't get me wrong. You know, he's a national treasure. He's a national Trevor, if you will. And he can do no wrong. He can do what he likes to his own songs. That's fine. Don't make me listen to it again.
Right, okay. Andrew, has this ruined Trevor Horn for you?
No,
you
nothing. I'm a huge fan, and I used to buy records just because he produced them and would happily... And then when things would happen, like he produces Belle and Sebastian, and you go, oh, my God, is he going to have orchestras and drum machines and octave bass lines on? And then it does, and you're a little bit disappointed. I am a huge Trevor Horn fan, and one record that's not floating my boat is not going to change that. I think this suffers from a really bad... set of mismatching the songs to the artist as well as an over-egging of it, because Rumour doing Slave to the Rhythm in Girls from Ukulele Style is missing the point of that song entirely, and not even 80s night audience wants that. If they're going to see Slave to the Rhythm, they want booming, they want, you know, that fantastic go-go thing and the enormous climactic grace.
You want a great big robot head, don't you?
You want a great,
like riding
big robot head,
It takes everything out of the disco, doesn't it, and sort of puts it in a kind of...
But like Hacienda Classical, isn't it? You know, people who can't stand up that long.
But also, like,
people who need a wee.
Increasingly me. The idea, but it's also things like, you know, having Tony Hadley do What's Love Got to Do with It. I mean, he is not a tragic Tina Turner figure who's been through a life of misery at the hands of awful men. He's Tony Foghorn Hadley. It doesn't make sense.
Doing
Joe Jackson's is different for girls. It's especially misconceived.
What about that Clannad one? They kind of get Jim Kerr in and put loads of kind of Scottish sound effects over
the shortbread tin version of Brothers at Arms.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, that wasn't terrific.
It's like a porridge ad.
So I think we can file this under Curio. Gigantic mega Curio.
Yes.
But Trevor Horn is still amazing.
He is.
Trevor Horn will always be amazing.
Yeah.
And he's a national Trevor.
And if he wants to reproduce this podcast with orchestra in a 50-minute long version with the voice of, what's his name, Patrick Allen, saying, don't go outside, it's radioactive, then he's absolutely welcome to, and our rates are very reasonable. Anyway, let's stop reinventing the 80s and start reinventing the 20-teens, although we left it a bit late for that. Michael Hogan, what record have you brought in for the listeners to listen to?
Well... sort of, it's kind of, you know, a sort of spiritual cousin of the Sleaford Mods one from earlier. It's called Doorman. It's by a rapper called Slow Tie, who comes from a Northampton council estate, you know, the hood.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. It's on the BBC Sound of 2019 list. It's kind of grime meets punk. It's got real snarl and swagger to it. It reminds me of sort of Dizzy Rascal and the Streets and Sleaford Mods.
And it's
fantastic.
It has actually got quite a Trevor Horny bit in the middle, hasn't it? As a voiceover about being a glue sniffer.
Yeah, it's kind of samples of drug dealers and drug users being interviewed on the TV news, I think.
Barry is a glue man, that kind of thing. let's have a listen to Doorman by Slow Tie.
If you don't gonna get your head kicked in.
True the messenger, string them up. She's a 10 plus 10, not enough. Mixed messages, wires cross. Marry me, what you got too much? Toothbrush and socks. Parents minute made fair couple dogs. We go on walks, she never talks. I put my heart out, she laps up my blood. Blue lights, double vision.
Finally, Steve Mason has carved out a bit of a space as the connoisseur's choice since the Beta band dissolved in the mid-noughties, even though his old band left him broke with severe depression and needing to take a job on a building site to make ends meet. After working out his kinks as King Biscuit Time and then the electronic pervery of Black Affair, he started putting an introspective electropop under his own name in 2010. Monkey Minds in the Devil's Time and Meet the Humans both went down swimmingly. So what's the story with his fourth album, About the Light? This is one of his flagship tracks. This is Stars Around My Heart.
If there are stars around my heart, would I dare at the star? She has brought lights I see. I won't look back, but that's not for me.
Steve Mason from About the Light. Now, Michael Hogan, how aware are you of Steve Mason and how he kind of reconstructed himself after the Beta Band? Had you listened to any of his solo bits?
No, I like the Beta Band, but I'd sort of lost touch with Steve Mason. And I'd sort of, you know, while I was listening to this album, I also saw his terrible tweet about Sophie Ellis-Bextor, which really...
Well, yes. Fill in the listeners on this one.
Well, I don't even quite know what Sophie Ellis-Bextor had done to rattle his cage, but he tweeted that, what does Sophie Ellis-Bextor know about disco? I bet all she's listened to is the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. And it was just very mansplainy and misogynistic and patronising and just like, oh, Steve, shut up. And he got a lot of grief for it for a day, and then 24 hours later, he apologised.
I think he knew he'd sort of made a bit. He knew that he'd made a bit of a bit of an ass of himself on that.
Yeah,
isn't this just the stupid thing about Twitter? You know, things that you know might your evil self might think of them and then not say them.
Mm.
Off it goes.
Is this why you don't go on Twitter?
Yeah, pretty much.
You just keep your evil self to yourself.
I do. I just have horrible thoughts on my own time.
Yeah. Evil self is sort of the drunk self, isn't it? A lot of people seem to have been drinking when they get into these bonds.
Yeah. And also, you know, Steve Mason, you know, as you said, he has that. You know,
he's had his issues.
He's had his issues.
Yes.
Don't take out on poor old Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
I agree.
No, but I think he knows.
Rhombus face disco diva.
He knows he'd done wrong on that one. What did you make of this album? What did you do on the record?
It was all right, I think. I quite liked it. It's sort of, it reminded me of an Elbow album, actually. It's called all sort of mid tempo and slightly kind of anthemic and you know, apparently it's his fourth album, but he's calling it his first proper album.
Yes.
Because he's got some brass in and he's got some female backing vocals and some hand claps and stuff. And it is quite sort of poppy and blue-eyed soul-y and uplifting at times. But, yeah, for me it was a little bit too mid-tempo and a bit, like, ploddy and, you know, couple swaying to Elbow at kind of Glastonbury at 4 PM.
One of the downers with the Beta Band was that it was sort of, towards the end, it was kind of swamped by its kind of own arch cynicism about how crap we are and how crap the business is. And in his solo career, he seems to have sort of rediscovered some sort of idealism and a bit of love for life, you know, being unpleasant to Sophie Ellis-Bextor notwithstanding. He actually seems to be a happier, better adjusted bloke now, and it kind of comes through in this, particularly in the last track, which is called The End, which is very much
like
for yourself
Beta
and
Band.
Be amazing. Yes.
Yeah,
what did you think of it? Are you a fan of him?
I think he's really good. I thought the Beta Band brilliant. I think he's done a lot of very good solo stuff. Obviously, it hasn't, you know, quite broken through in the way that Elbow has. Elbow, though, really reminds you of Elbow.
Yeah, it
reminded
absolutely.
Me of Elbow.
My missus came in the room and genuinely thought I was playing Elbow.
God. Yeah. Well, I missed that.
I know. I'm not sure it's what, you know, it's what Steve Mason wanted.
I thought, you know, it's a nice, you know, it's a good sounding record, good tunes. Stylistically, it's quite eclectic. You know, it does go various places. You know, you've got your indie, nice jangly indie pop, you know, as you say, you've got the brass stuff on there. It has a, you know, is it, you know, is there some elements of spiritual questing there? There's the end of a relationship, you know. There is an examination of the world. It has a sort of, it works on several layers, you know. The end, destruction. Don't forget, he's talking about Brexit.
But destruction and creation, yes.
Destruction and creation. But no, I mean, I think after, you know, I understand why he calls it his first record, because I think it was, you know, it's coherent, you know, it's positive.
Yeah, I thought there were sort of you know, half a dozen good songs on it. It's a 3 star out of 5 for me.
I find that at a basic level, his voice just has a very nice texture. It's a bit like Green from Scritti Blizzy or Brian Wilson. It's just a nice thing to listen to in its own right.
And
it's inimitable. Well, I mean, it doesn't need to be sort of Premier League like that, but it has a character the way a lot of people's voices feel like insert voice here, and you always know it's him. And it's kind of breathes a character through the whole thing that can change your feeling about the record, is what I think.
I think you might be right. I think also there is that the possibility that you do know that there are, you know, he does have a range of moods. He has a range of expression, you know. And the lyrics are worth listening to. I think it is a better record than 3 out of 5. I'd give it 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. See, this is arguing about star ratings.
I know. You got them for the poster.
Is that fair enough? Not allowed half stars.
I liked it when somebody, can't remember who it was, they'd got 2 stars from one of the magazines. So on the poster, they kind of placed their head in the way.
I know exactly what it was.
So it looked like 5 stars.
It was that terrible Craze film. Not the Craze with the Kemp brothers, but a kind of recent one with Tom Hardy playing both brothers.
That's it, yeah. It was.
And they had sort of 2 silhouettes of the two, of Tom Hardy. And they put the shortlist review kind of in the middle, so you could just see the 2 stars peeping out. And you thought, oh, there must be stars either side of that.
Yes.
There weren't.
Stan Pattenden, what did you make of Steve Mason's album?
The trouble is, I thought it was pleasant.
Yeah.
And thinking something is pleasant, oh, this is all right, it's January, it's all right. Put this on the background. And then you sort of forget it's in the background. There's some good tunes. But, you know, it's like having an idea. Anyone can have an idea. Anyone can write a good tune. What are you doing with it?
If anyone can write a good tune, why are there so few of them?
And why are we all here? Why are we off there writing good tunes?
That sort of ABC good tune. First chorus. It is quite Smithsy, I thought. When I then realised that Stephen Street had produced it, there are bits where guitar's the 4, a bit of jangle,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a bit of twangs in there at times. A bit of
I'm not sure, actually, that he shouldn't have just screamed through one track or just gone a bit. You know, he's quite incarcerated within it. It's quite closed in some ways, and I kind of wanted some abandon, maybe a bit.
Yeah, it does. It is quite kind of mono, isn't it? It's sort of very
polite.
One note.
Maybe it's a bit like that, and you can imagine playing live all the, as I think Michael said, all the very polite people going to watch it and then having just one more beer, but you know, more because I've got
to do
that
thing. Well, you know that thing where the terrible couples do, where the woman stands in front of the bloke and he puts his arms around her and they kind of sway together.
Oh, God, you can't see. Yeah, so I kick them out of the way.
Well, I think it's better than that. I mean, I think, you know, with him, you are dealing with somebody like, you know, dare I say, like Kevin Rowland almost, you know, obviously not without the dress and the sort of that kind of thing. But, you know, he is somebody who has a vision and he has pursued that.
Kevin Rowland without the dress.
And it's taken him some peculiar... That's very unfair, actually. Sorry, Kevin, I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
It's taken him some peculiar
place. Dapper dresser these days, Kevin Rowland.
Yeah.
Literally the best dressed bloke on the planet.
Those turn-ups are perfect.
He puts Peaky Blinders.
I have no idea how Steve Mason dresses.
We must know this. Maybe, yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it's a much better record than maybe these two cynics here are making out.
Bloody Philistines.
Bloody Philistines.
We want punk rock.
Flirty dancing.
Punk rock, please. More Sleaford Mods.
So it's a hit in the Harrison household.
It's a hit in the Harrison household.
Yeah, Harrison Brothers Cabal.
Do you still live in a big house? Because I mean, sort of sleep.
It's got a tunnel.
Stripy pajamas.
Like the Beatles, yeah. It's a great big long bed with the entire family sleeping in it. I thought there was a particularly good thing on this record, which I really enjoyed. There's a great song called Fox on the Rooftop, which is very beta band, and it's basically a fox on the roof of his shed. Comparing it to the beast in his mind, the beast that drives him on that he can't control.
Ted Hughes was doing that 30 years ago.
But this is why, for me, you know, it is better, you know, better than what you're saying, because I think he is an interesting character. And I think he, you know, maybe, you know, he's not shouting, but on some level he is. He's controlling it.
Yes.
And it's coming out in different ways.
He's got a rubbish
name
now, isn't he? Steve Mason. What a boring name in pop.
Well, come on, you guttering sort of thing.
You're calling yourself something else.
I mean, I'm called Sean Pattenden. Couldn't help it, could I?
We've got better pop star names than Steve Mason, I'm saying.
What do you think he ought to be
called? What's he called, you know, Keith Green?
You know, do you want it to be called like Zoltan Magnifico or something?
Yes, I do.
Cobalt Stargazer.
Yeah. Slam Thunderhide. Yeah.
Jimmy the Hoover.
Jimmy the Hoover, yeah.
Casey Chaos was a good one, wasn't it?
Casey Chaos. Yes. There is a great line on here as well on Walking Away From Love. Sick of all the little chances, don't you know, used to be a disco dancer. Kind of a hostage to fortune if you can have a go at people for their knowledge of disco, isn't it?
Yeah.
We should stop harping on about this.
We should do it. Yeah. I mean, Twitter is a silly thing, isn't it? You know this.
It is bloody awful, yes. So I am giving this... We don't do star ratings.
No, I hate stars.
I'm giving it thumbs up, 2 thumbs up. I really like this record, so...
Yeah. I'm giving it some big toes up as well.
Big toes, so you know. Anyway.
I'm giving it 1 thumbs up and 1 kind of...
Swingy and dodgy. Yeah.
Well, we're coming towards the end of the show, which means the return of closing time chatter. What will our guests be discussing over a gin Ricky or a Mary Pickford as the Keystone Cops come to turf them out of
a
black
conversation
and white,
corner or a tingly ball?
To be turfed out of conversation corner. Sean, we never start with you.
No.
What's your closing time chatter.
Well, this week I've been mainly watching the Gillette ad because it caused such a furore on Twitter, funnily enough. And I wondered that why pop music doesn't do this anymore. 1975 sing about really quite evil things. They get away with it completely because it's their audience. Gillette do something, whereas men, some of you are, you know, kind of pushing it a bit. Could you rein it back in? Which I think is perfectly reasonable. And they get pilloried
do you know
for
it. Now it's the best a man can be.
Yes.
Does that mean it's now Gillette? The best a man can be.
Yes,
unless you want to get Gillette.
Yeah.
The best a man can be.
Yes. But as we know, Gillette also, they're owned by Procter & Gamble, but they also sell razors for women. So
lovely pink ones.
Yes. Well, maybe they could actually turn them a better colour, like normal, like white.
Or maybe they could just sell the lovely pink razors with four men and women as well and be a bit
for
more woke
everyone.
Than you are, yeah. Sean, so-called panda.
But I like woke Gillette. I'm up with that. I'm like woke stuff, and I sent the link to my sister, and she said she cried because what? All the men go nice at the end, and then they're like the younger generation.
I'm worried about your sister. She got other
She's
stuff going
quite worrying.
On.
Yeah.
I invented this because I did a feature for Esquire
what
about
did you invent?
Feminism.
Like Carol Decker invented
Everything.
Rap.
I invented it all. I did a feature for Esquire about like this a few years ago when feminism was just coming back, having been underground for ages, and it was like how to be a feminist for men. And the conclusion from all the people I interviewed was men don't be a dick.
Yeah, that
don't
is
be
it.
A dick. So I invented this.
One more thing though. My closing time chatter was meant to be about the greatest pun I thought of this morning.
Yes.
But I haven't been able to shoehorn it in.
Take the golden shoehorn.
I will. Here it is. We're all worshipping at the altar of Laboratoire Barnier.
There you go.
Yeah. Brexit.
I couldn't get it in any
so
other
that
way.
So that one will be transferred to Romaniacs, our companion
Thanks.
Podcast in due course. Ian Harrison, what's your closing time chatter in Conversation Corner?
I mean, it's very, very trivial.
What
I've been noticing, you know them Vans trainers? Black trainers with the little white stripe on them.
Right.
Like, they're a bit like Nike, but not.
I know exactly the ones you mean. I've got a pair.
You've got them?
I've got navy blue. They're back, aren't they? They're everywhere.
When did you get them?
About a year ago, maybe.
Okay, because they are everywhere. Mm. Before Christmas, I was out there and I said to my daughter, let's look out for them shoes. And it was hilarious, because they're all traips and past.
They're the new Stan Smiths, aren't they? You know,
they are.
You know, about a year and a half ago, when everyone had Stan Smiths, and then...
So if this was The Guardian, I would now say, what does it say about us now as a society today, now in this moment in time?
I was just thinking more of, what is it, what are the secret messages, and who decides, you know? Why does everybody suddenly
messages?
Want them? Just why are these shoes suddenly everywhere? Because they're trendy.
It's fashion.
Because it's fashion.
It doesn't mean anything. Fashion turns
it does
to left.
Mean stuff.
That doesn't.
But this, I don't know. This one seems. I don't know. Maybe think more because you know they're just like basically plimsoles, aren't they? You can get really cheap ones from Sports
I don't think
Direct.
Anybody has said plimsole since about 1978.
Well, I'm saying it. All right.
Okay.
Pumps. Deal with it.
Gym pumps.
Pumps.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Pumps.
Gym pumps. But because they're Vans, they're much more expensive. And actually, I was going to say, and I might not say because you're here, but I have noticed older gents buying them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
fine with that.
People who are obviously seeing the kids walking around in them.
I know.
I didn't say this was going to go anywhere. I just said this is what I'm going to be musing upon.
Okay, so it's for older guys. It's for Vans Morrison.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Boom.
Sorry about that. Michael.
The Laboratoire Barnier was better.
It was definitely better. Michael, you're in Conversation Corner. What's your closing time chat?
Well, I was going to bring up the Guardian blind date couple who have been the best thing of this week. It's been a dispiriting January.
In case the listeners missed it, give a quick précis here.
In case the viewers missed it and the readers, these two women called Joanne and Morgan, both 24, went out on the Guardian weekend's blind date thing. They bonded over pasta and Negronis. They got absolutely hammered. They snogged each other's faces off in the restaurant. One of them bumped into a glass wall because she was so drunk. They then gate crashed a house party and one of them left their knickers behind. Now, this is what, you know, dating and being young should be. Mm. Not people kind of picking apart each other's table manners and sort of saying, hey, didn't you need a starter?
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I'd had a second glass of wine but had a big meeting at work tomorrow.
Yeah.
All that kind of shite, which is what you normally get on the Guardian.
Will you meet again? Possibly as friends.
Yeah.
Bore off,
but this is great. They both give each other 10 out of 10. They're starting a full-time relationship. Ed Balls tweeted, this is the best blind date ever. Nish Kumar, the comedian, said, so someone has to buy the film rights. It was just really...
Well, that's going a bit far, isn't it?
It is, but it was just really sort of life-affirming and a joyful kind of
thing. So you said that pop music should be more offensive. You're saying dating should be more offensive.
Yes, things should be more offensive.
Things should be more offensive. Thinkford Mods, they're offensive.
Thinkford Mods are
offensive.
Yeah. I don't think that dating should be more offensive. It was just because you read those columns and they are usually so boring.
Yeah.
And it's we set a boring person up with another boring person. They had a boring evening, and they talk about it boringly.
The worst thing is like, you know, did you go on somewhere after dinner? And they always say, no, I had a big meeting at work in the morning. I wanted to get home. We kissed at the tube. It's just like, oh, yeah.
I got the sense. Where's the
rutting
from Joanne and Morgan, or Joe Organ, as we're probably going to be calling
it
now.
Yes,
on.
That's good.
I got a sense that they'd actually censored it a bit. I think they probably had a fair old bit more than was mentioned in there.
Oh, yes.
Of course they did.
I think they knocked the roof off it.
There was a wonderful thing. I think the third question in with that Guardian thing is, what did you talk about? Both of them said, I can't remember.
And you knew
this was going to be classic.
Yeah.
Gold from that.
They had like four or five Negronis each. Then they shared two bottles of wine.
It's like they've actually let some real people in.
Real people.
I think they should change it, because I remember one of these lists of hilarious, you know, dating, you know, proffering, please go out with me. And I think some guy had said, smokes 100 a day, hates children, and cries at the trooping of the colour. I'd go out with him.
Was it you?
It was, actually, yeah. I'm going to marry myself.
Maybe we could match up with Sean's sister who cries at the Gillette ad.
Oh, no, yes, she is available, everybody. She's single.
The hilarious mashup.
Sorry, Esther, but you are. I mean, come on.
This is
great.
Does
she too cry at the trooping of the colour?
Gillette cry at anything at the moment, yeah.
Big mouth dating coming to the internet near you soon.
Good idea, big mouth.
It's a very good idea.
It's the word.
Yeah. So my closing time chatter is, I'm in a Facebook group of sub-editors, magazine and newspaper sub-editors. It's called Horny Handed Subs of Toil. And they share their woes of terrible sub-editing that they've had to do and terrible mistakes from name writers who can't spell their own name and stuff like that. But this week there was a thing about copy-taking errors. And that's, in the olden days, you had to ring up from a phone box and read your piece while stuffing two P's into the slot and hope that the copy taker would get it right. And I used to do this on Liverpool Echo years ago, and it contained all the errors from various subs up and down the country, including that had been done by, you know, copy takers, including the 1998 World Cup. Trouble breaks out between rival fans and the gendarmes arrive. And one of the reports said that van loads of John Barnes had arrived at the scene, which I'm pretty impressed.
Rapping cops.
A rugby league team called Hulking Stone Rovers, which sounds like the Sleaford Mod spin-off band. There was an A.A. Gill restaurant review where minute slivers of some dish appeared as minute slivers.
Wow.
Which, of course, you would imagine A.A. Gill eating a minute sliver with a little thing. The travel writer Tim Moore took listings over the phone at the Evening Standard, and he said he once entered an inspector calls as Anne in spectacles, which I was totally going to see as well.
Brilliant.
But my favourite one, and this is actually not really copy-taking, but it was radio, the BBC Leeds journalist at Valley Parade, who informed listeners that Greg Abbott had pissed a late fatness test.
Wow.
Which is very impressive. And that is your show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Ian Harrison and Michael Hogan for joining us. You're going to stick around for the extra bit in a minute, which is going to go to the Patreon backers.
Who?
Yes, and we're going to be discussing best and worst people that we've interviewed in our glittering, illustrious careers. Patreon backers, look out for the extra bit. It'll be with you soon. Thanks to Sean and producer Sophie Black. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you,
Sophie. We're going to see you all next week, and we're going to play out with New Order again.
Woo.
Why? Because, no sooner we talked about technique last week than this brilliant remix of Fine Time by somebody called Nolan came out. That's the power of Big Mouth. We're influencing the world of pop. Have a listen. This is the Nolan remix of Fine Time by New Order, and we're going to see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. You got love, technique.